Welcome to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. And now, experience the good life today.
Aloha from Honolulu, Hawaii. I'm Danny Yamashiro. Welcome to The Good Life. We're here to help unleash your God-given purpose. My co-host is Norman Nakanishi, former University of Hawaii football chaplain, pastor of one of Hawaii's fastest-growing churches, respected, highly sought as an inspirational communicator. And this is part of a special series we're calling Leadership Moments. How would you live your life if the devil intruded your home as a child? Listen to this as we get ready for our guest today.
Born in 1970, author Rebecca Alonzo was raised in a loving home. Her father, Pastor Robert Nichols, and her mother Ramona had settled in Sellerstown, North Carolina, where Robert was a pastor at the Free Welcome Holiness Church. Robert was a devoted father, and Ramona, a constant source of love and compassion to Rebecca and her younger brother Danny. Yet Rebecca never felt safe as a child. Although she lived next door to the church her father pastored, the devil lived across the street. When Pastor Nichols and his family arrived in Sellerstown, they were eagerly welcomed by the small community, except for one man, Mr. Watts, the occupant of pew number 7. Wanting to control the church himself, Watts resisted the new pastor every way he could, first with threats, and then with violence. The Nichols couldn't ignore the strategy of terror Watts had unleashed. Each attack had become increasingly devastating and violent. The Nichols family stood their ground, but after 5 years of relentless persecution, a man walked into their home armed with 3 guns. 7-year-old Rebecca and 3-year-old Danny hid under the dinner table and watched the nightmare unfold. Their lives would never be the same again. If anyone had cause to harbor hatred and seek personal revenge, it would be Rebecca. Yet she had learned the value of forgiveness from her parents at a young age. Rebecca's ultimate test came a decade later when she received a phone call from Mr. Watts. He had an almost unbelievable question to ask. The Devil in Pew Number 7 tells the amazing true story of one family's faith and courage, the healing power of forgiveness, and a daughter's trust in her father's goodness in spite of her personal loss.
We have with us today from Tennessee in studio, Pastor Norman and I in studio with Rebecca Alonzo from Tennessee. Rebecca, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Aloha, Rebecca.
Aloha, Pastor Norman.
Nice to hear your voice and that incredibly handsome hunk of a husband. Not Mike. But
Mike's
Kenny.
Mike's going to tell you hello.
Man, we were just listening to the clip again and just recapping the whole story of what you went through. And I was reflecting on your appearance along with your brother on the Dr. Phil show. Let me start out real straight up for our listening audience. How in the world did you manage to forgive not only the shooter, the man behind the shooter, and really the Lord himself for allowing that? Because, Rebecca, you had to struggle through all three facets. And, you know, and you have to continue to walk in that victory.
Right.
None of us will probably ever have to go through that. A member in your church. Talk to us about that. Keys of forgiveness.
Yeah, I believe that now looking back as an adult into my childhood, that the reason I was able to walk through the different things that our family experienced as pastoring a small church in a small town in North Carolina back in the 70s. You know, it was just, it was such an amazing time in my parents' life, because when they got to this church, there were about a dozen people there, and they watched that church grow from that dozen to over 100 within a year. And so we became family with these church members and these community families that came to our church. It was called Sellerstown because almost everybody's last name was Sellers. So it was a very tight community. And being brought up in a very loving and forgiving home laid that background and foundation for me to go through the things that we went through and be able to talk to you and your listeners today and give people hope that no matter what you go through in life, God is there and He has a plan even when we don't. He knows what we're going to go through and He's there to walk through it with us. And so I learned that as a child. Mm-hmm. And that helped me be able to go through, you know, seeing some of the things that I saw as a little girl, living across the street from a terrorist, from a man who attended our church. And that's why the name of the book is called The Devil in Pew Number 7, because this man sat in pew number 7 every Sunday, and he terrorized our family for over 5 years.
Rebecca, when you mentioned the length of time, see, when we hear about this happening, you telling us 5 years helps to bring it into perspective. I mean, it wasn't just someone that was heckling your family or heckling dad as a nuisance. I mean, this was serious stuff going on. And you, as a child, how did you feel going through that week after week, living like that being your reality?
Right. Well, it started out as what people would probably consider minor. Mr. Watts is this man's name that is the instigator of the things that happened later. He would, you know, make faces at the singers in church. He would cough really loud. He would get up and walk out and slam the door. It was just everything. It was every pastor's nightmare, really, to have someone like this in your church, disrupting church Sunday after Sunday. But then the harassing phone calls began. And so Mr. Watts was actually hiring ex-cons to sit by a phone and call our home 30 to 60 times a day, mainly at night, call and hang up, call and hang up. Then the threatening letters began coming in the mail, and one of those letters read, "You will leave Sellerstown walking, crawling, dead or alive." So the police were called at that point. Now, Mr. Watts had sat low for about a year and a half, just kind of sitting back watching my young 30-something-year-old evangelical dad come into this community and set up order in a church. He set up an elder board. He said you had to be a member to vote on church business. This man was not a member. He removed Mr. Watts' wife from some positions in the church, like church secretary, adult Sunday school teacher. When my dad came into this church, he saw some things that were not biblically sound, so or ethically sound. And so he started coming in, cleaning house, and setting things up according to the New Testament. So this angered Mr. Watts, which began this war between Mr. Watts and my dad. And so I watched my dad every Sunday get up and deal with this situation that was going on. Sometimes there would be a few months that would go by, and Mr. Watts would be real quiet. We would think, yay, God answered our prayer. He's finally given up, you know. But then when the harassing phone calls and threatening letters didn't scare my parents off, he would have these guys sneak into our yard at night and slash our car tires, cut our phone lines, and then do drive-by shooting. So we were pretty much held hostage in our home.
Drive-by shootings.
Drive-by shootings. So by the time I was 4, I had, you know, bullets flying past my head, and police were called, and everyone knew who was behind it, but no one could prove it. They could not collect evidence enough to prove it. This man, Mr. Watts, was a very wealthy man. He had a lot of political power. He was a millionaire. He had a lot of money to back up the connections that he had. So my dad, the 30-something-year-old, was up against a 60-something-year-old godfather-type person over that community. Mm-hmm. And over a period of 5 years, not only were there drive-by shootings, but then he upped the ante and hired these guys to sneak into our yard at night. Sometimes behind our home, we had cornfields behind our home because we lived out in the country, and they would tie dynamite sticks onto the corn stalks. And I was taught as a little girl, if you hear tires squeal, get down, because that means someone has just lit a long fuse and they're trying to get away before they're caught by the police. So,
that kind of description.
It was just mind-boggling as a child why this man hated my dad, whom everyone else loved. Mm-hmm. You know. Mm-hmm. So it was just trying to get through these kind of attacks. When the dynamite explosions went off, the FBI were called in. And so the FBI began investigating, trying to gather evidence so that they could convict Mr. Watts, because they knew who was behind it. But like I said, he hired people so he could say, I didn't do anything. You know, I didn't set off that explosion. I didn't shoot up their house.
Really, really operating like the Godfather.
Hard to
pin anything on him because he has his... His lieutenants and his workers doing it for him. We're going to take a quick break right now. Rebecca, things got worse, didn't it? And when things did get worse, it got so bad, it's beyond what any child... You know, you have these fears as a child. It went beyond that. And then more so, how she had to live with the results of that. Rebecca Nichols Alonzo will share more with us about this riveting story when we come back. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky, leave it to me, I'll lead you home. Afraid that you will not be found. It won't be long before your sun goes down. Just leave it to me. I'll lead you home.
Active lifestyles are promoted for healthy living. This involves exercise and a range of sporting activities. There are times, though, when injuries take place resulting from sports, work, or even the effects of age. In some cases, surgical care is necessary to facilitate proper healing. That's the time to call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, with offices at both Polymomi and Kuakini. Dr. Calvin Oishi has treated patients with the compassion, care, and expertise second to none. Call orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, 484-2042. 484-2042.
There was a time when filling up your gas tank was a full-service experience. The attendant would look under your hood, check your oil and water, check your tires, and wipe your windows, all while your tank's being filled. Burt's Union Service Station on School Street still does it. They also provide auto repair services with master mechanics to give your car the needed fixing to keep it going a long time, so your dollars stretch with a lasting, smoothly running vehicle. Visit them today. Burt's Union on School Street.
On a dark, howling winter night, 18-year-old Danny Yamashiro fell headfirst 400 feet from historic Poly Ridge. Massive head injuries, crushed organs, and a shattered ankle changed his life, becoming a radio host, pastor, author, and worldwide evangelist. In his book, Paradise Calls, Danny recounts his personal journey and how God turned debilitating depression, isolation, and failure into a calling that reaches hundreds of thousands.
New York Times bestselling author Stephen Mansfield writes, Danny Yamashiro's story reveals the power of this call so vibrantly that we are all infused with passion to take hold of our eternal purpose.
Get this riveting story as a free ebook today. at thegoodlifehawaii.com.
Johnny Erickson Tata says Danny Yamashiro has turned every challenge into a cherished opportunity to point people to Jesus.
Go to thegoodlifehawaii.com and download Paradise Calls free today. That's thegoodlifehawaii.com.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Rebecca Alonzo never felt safe as a child. She lived next door. She lived next door to the church her father pastored. The devil lived across the street. This man tormented, terrorized her family with rifle shots, bombings, dynamite. And when these violent acts didn't scare them away, he went even further. You're listening to the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show. I'm Danny Yamashiro with my co-host Norman Nakanishi. Our guest today, Rebecca Alonzo.
Rebecca, no yes. matter how many times I hear the account, I'm stupefied, I'm overwhelmed, and I wasn't even there. Words probably right. cannot express what you went through, but it didn't stop. I mean, this sounds like a Middle East terrorist.
Yeah.
I mean, bombings, shootings, but it didn't stop there. It evolved into the ultimate intrusion. Take us there.
Well, after 5 years of going through this harassment and terrorism at the hands of Mr. Watts, he finally found out a way to get a human weapon inside of our home. Everything else had been done, you know, on the exterior perimeter of our home and our church property. But my mom's best friend was married to an abusive alcoholic. And she had called my mother and said, you know, he is drinking again. He is angry. He's threatening me and my child. And so my mom, being, you know, a sweet friend and a helpful pastor's wife, said, come and stay with us. So she brought her child, her two-year-old, to stay with us. And, you know, I say as an adult looking back, we were not the safest place in town. You know, we were being harassed and had drive-by shootings and explosions, but my mom just felt like if this friend came and stayed with us, she could reach out and help her and pray with her and comfort her. And so when Mr. Watts found out about this opportunity, he had some of his hired henchmen go over and have a conversation with this woman's husband, and his name is Harris Williams. And so Harris, who's been drinking and is already angry, is now pumped full of lies by these guys, which gets him angry enough to do what he did. Easter weekend, 1978, I'm sitting at my kitchen table with my family. My dad is excited about Easter coming up, and my mom prepared the music for the services, and we have this broken woman in our home that they're trying to love on and reach out to. And while we're sitting down to eat dinner, her husband, who's been provoked by Mr. Watson, comes into our home with three guns. And I watch as this man pulls out a gun. Now, I'm 7 years old at this point. My brother Daniel is three. And we watch as this man pulls out a gun and shoots both of our parents in front of us while we're sitting down to eat dinner. And that's actually what I begin the book with. Chapter one is me running for help. I'm 7 years old. I've just witnessed both of my parents be gunned down by a man that my parents had reached out to help. And now I'm running as fast as my little feet can take me down the road, because we lived out in the country, so I had to run away to try to get help. I was my family's only lifeline that day. So it was just, you know, we thought what we had gone through before was terrible, but that day just really changed our lives forever, because my mother had jumped up to run for help, and when she did, one of the bullets clipped her heart. Oh. And we find out later, you know, like 3 hours later, mm-hmm. that she had passed and gone to heaven mm-hmm. that day. Mm-hmm. And so my dad, who was also shot twice, once in the right shoulder and once in the left hip, when it hit him in the left hip, it knocked him to the ground. So my almost six foot four father, who was a Navy vet, we had guns hanging on the walls because he liked to hunt. He could not do one thing to help us. He could not get to the guns to help us. He couldn't shield us. He couldn't do anything. He fell to the floor. And that's when I ran under the table, and then I was sent for help. You know, as time passed, I was able to sneak out of the house and run for help. So that day was just, I can see it still in my mind. You know, I had to testify a few months later at the murder trial because I was a witness. Mm-hmm. So that day, my dad lost his best friend, his partner in ministry, and the mother of his children. So my dad survived physically, but emotionally, he was never the same again. And because of that shooting and losing our mom, we then had to move from our home and our friends and our church. We had to say goodbye to all that we knew and move from North Carolina to Mobile, Alabama, to live with my dad's family so that they could take care of us. And he had one sister that was living at home who was single, and her name is Dorothy, and she took my brother and I in under her wings and just continued to teach us what our parents had started teaching us about forgiveness. Hmm. And so that was very, very important for me to see my dad and mom, you know, my parents love and forgive and pray. And then now we're with my dad's family doing the same thing, loving, forgiving, and praying.
What did Auntie teach you and your brother Daniel at that time?
Well, she would always go to the scripture, you know, because we knew that was the authority on mm-hmm. our life from the Lord. And she would teach us about Matthew 6:14, where it says, if you forgive others when they sin against you, then your heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you don't forgive, then he won't forgive you. And she would say, we are all sinners, and we all need forgiveness. Mm. And so she was teaching me, even if this doesn't make sense, even if you have a right to hold a grudge, especially with, you know, Mr. Watts, who instigated the whole thing, but was never connected to the shooting. He was never connected to it. So the shooter was actually sentenced to life in prison, plus 15 years or 14 years for assault with a deadly weapon. So Mr. Watts got away with the terrorism. He got away with instigating that shooting. And, you know, if not for one FBI agent that would not give up on our case even after we left North Carolina, 2 years later, after the shooting, we find out that Mr. Watts was finally arrested and convicted by a federal grand jury for the dynamite explosions that he had put off firehouse, and also because of the threatening letters using the U.S. mail to, you know, deliver threatening letters to our home. So he was sent to prison, and he just got kind of a slap on the hand. He was sentenced to 15 years. So, you know, both men that had hurt our family at that point were in prison now.
Rebecca, I mean, I'm sure our listening audience is just dumbfounded, shocked. I mean, I am, and I've heard this so many times. Talk to us about the reality as a believer, knowing the Bible, being so well taught by your parents, by the church, by your father, who was just stellar, how did you walk through the process of forgiveness over what happened, because this is not just somebody gossiping about you. These are people who conspired to kill your parents. What would you say to listeners that face the battle of resentment and potential bitterness and ongoing unforgiveness? And how did you come to breakthrough? And then really, Rebecca, there's a difference between forgiving and healing.
Right. Right. Well, I did get angry with God, and I've talked to a lot of people through the years that know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. you know. Because mm-hmm. you look at God and you go, well, God, you know everything and you're in control, and so how could you allow mm-hmm. this to happen? Mm-hmm. And so I went through a couple of years where I was very angry at God, because 7 years after the shooting, I come home from school one day to be told that our dad, who was only 46 years old, in the hospital being treated for his nerves because of all of the shootings and dynamite explosions, he was suffering from post-traumatic mm-hmm. stress syndrome, and so he was being treated for that. And we come home from school one day waiting for our dad to come home, and we're told that he has now passed away. Well, I was 14 years old. And so for those next 2 years, when people tell me, I don't know how to forgive, or I can't forgive, or I'm so angry, I can say to them, I know how that feels. Mm-hmm. I know how that feels to be angry with God and not understand why he allows certain things to happen. And I wrestled with that for a couple of years. But after trying different things and trying to find peace in different ways and mm-hmm. not being able to find it, I finally realized that I needed God more than I needed to be mad at him. Mm-hmm. I needed God's peace more than I needed my justification of anger towards him. And so when I finally let go of that anger, that's when the peace came. And that's when my healing began to come. And I journaled and I read my Bible and I cried and I went through depression and I went through all those human emotions that we go through when we experience loss or anger or just things that aren't fair in life. You know, I say when you're about 2 years old, you stomp your foot and you're, you know, that's not fair. And that ends when you're about 92. I mean, we go through life saying things aren't fair, mm-hmm. you know. But I learned at a young age that I had to trust God. I didn't have parents to look to anymore. I had to learn how to forgive on my own. And I looked at the example of Jesus on the cross, being persecuted. And while he was being spit on and beaten and crucified, he was saying, Father, forgive them because they don't know what they're doing. And so I had to say, Father, I forgive them because somehow they don't know what they're doing. We think people, you know what they're doing, but they're really being used by the real enemy, who is the devil, the enemy of God. And he uses them to hurt us. And then we're angry at them. But the real enemy is really Satan, the enemy of God. And so when I learned that, that helped me forgive the person who was being used by the real enemy and helped me forgive that person and pray for that person. And I grew up praying for Mr. Watts. Wow. And I grew up praying for Harris Williams.
Wow. Rebecca, you have thwarted, by the grace of God, the power of God, you have thwarted the elaborate scheme of the devil to destroy your life and Daniel's life. And now the tables have been turned, because the message of forgiveness that you communicate so out of the in such a visceral way, it dismantles the schemes of the evil one and the forces of darkness, because you made a choice to forgive. I mean, it came to a point, and today, as you're listening, our dear friend, you're listening today to Rebecca Alonzo, the author of the book, The Devil in Pew Number 7, sharing her story of pain, watching her dad weaken over time, even though he had forgiven. He died after 7 years after her mom was brutally murdered in their home. She chose to forgive. We're going to take a quick break right now. And as we do, the challenge is out for us. Are we holding back forgiveness? Are we short-circuiting the quality of life, the abundant life that the Lord has for us? So the Lord brings Rebecca Alonzo to speak with such extremes that we all can connect with the severity and the reality of need for forgiveness. When we come back, she'll share more insights on forgiveness. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky, leave it to me, I lead you home.
A healthy smile can make all the difference, but where do you go for healthy teeth? Dr. Kerry Ishihara is a specialist in general dentistry in Wahiawa. With more than 20 years of experience, Dr. Ishihara serves the people of Wahiawa, including a special focus on military families. As a lieutenant colonel in the U.S. Army Reserves, he understands the needs of soldiers and families in our military community. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is proud to have Dr. Kerry Ishihara as an anchor sponsor. Call him at 621-8281. That's 621-8281.
Do you need a specialist in cosmetic dentistry? Someone who can bring the best in you from the inside out. Let Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa help you. His warmth, compassion, and expertise provides all the assurance needed for your dental needs. Visit Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry in Kaneohe. Call him at 235-4525 to make an appointment today. That's 235-4525. Or visit jeffmiyazawa.com. Windward Family Dentistry, where a lifetime of smiles is created. Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org. Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
You ever feel like you're stuck? You know, you seem to have hit the ceiling in your life. And you just can't get beyond because something's nagging at you. You always seem to somehow sabotage yourself in your progress. Could it be because there's more healing that has to take place in your life? You know, Rebecca Nichols Alonzo, she's the author of the book, The Devil in Pew Number 7. She's had to break through some of these barriers, and the Lord has helped her to do it, as she describes in her book. And as she's traveled, speaking about her book, she's even been featured on the Dr. Phil show. I mean, that was really, really graphic. She'll share a little bit about that. The 700 Club, Lifestyle Magazine, and CNN.com. You're listening to the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show. I'm Danny Yamashiro with Norman Nakanishi. I'm so grateful that you're with us, and I believe you're going to get something really, really rich from our time. We're dealing with some tough issues today. If you're tuning in right now, you want to get the whole podcast, the show in its entirety, go to thegoodlifehawaii.com and get the podcast for free. Listen, share it with others. And to get The Devil in Pew Number 7, the book written by Rebecca Nichols Alonzo, you can find that at amazon.com. To find out more about her, beckyalonzo.com.
Hi, Rebecca. You know,
hello.
I was just... Jesus teaches that forgiveness is a process. And at one point in Scripture, he even mentions 70 times 7 in a day, you need to keep forgiving. Where was the tipping point for you, Rebecca, where repeated forgiveness started producing a very perceptible healing in your soul? How long of a journey was that? Because a lot of people quit forgiving and get stuck because they're going, well, I still feel the hurt. And then they give in to bitterness, which ruins them. Talk to us about that. Because obviously you live in victory today. How long of a journey was that? Maybe some practical keys on breakthrough.
Yes. Well, like I said, I grew up as a child seeing my parents' example. So if there's any parents listening to this today, just be encouraged that little ones are watching. And I'm very thankful that my parents lived what they preached, and they said forgive, and then they were able to do that. And then as a teenager, like I said, I had to learn how to do that on my own because both of my parents at that time were deceased. And so whenever I let go of the anger, you know, it takes a lot of energy to hang on to grudges.
Mm.
It takes a lot of energy to stay angry. And I had gotten to a place of exhaustion with that. And thankfully, God never leaves us alone in our pain.
Mm-hmm.
He never leaves us alone. Even when we turn our back on him, he never turns his back on us. And so our Aunt Dot that ended up adopting us, you know, had taught us a lot about, like you were just saying, Pastor Norman, about forgiveness. Sometimes we think we've forgiven people, and then we see them or we hear their name. We see something that reminds us of them. And our aunt would explain to us, the way that you truly know that you've forgiven someone is if you can see them or hear their name or be reminded of the hurt and you can pray for them and bless them. And she bases that on Romans 12:14, where Paul is speaking to the Roman church and he's telling them, and they're being persecuted. I mean, we think, you know, we've seen persecution. This was back in the Roman times. And he was encouraging them to, and saying, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse. So her modern-day translation of that was, when you think of Mr. Watts and you remember the drive-by shootings as a child, you remember the dynamite explosions, you remember the threatening letters that came in the mail, when you remember those things, when you remember seeing your parents gunned down in front of you, when you remember those things, if you can pray for the people that did those things and you can bless them, then that's how you know you've truly forgiven them. If you can't, then that means, like you were saying, it's a process. I talked to one friend who said she thought she had forgiven someone and she saw him at a red light and wanted to kill him. And so I said, sister, you're still walking out your process of forgiveness. You're not there yet, but don't give up. And I try to encourage people, forgiveness is a lifetime occupation. You might retire from some jobs, but you will never retire from forgiving. And God, you know, he's got a funny sense of humor. He puts people in our lives that we will have to forgive over and over and over. And while we went through all of this, I learned what forgiveness was. It's a choice. It's not a feeling. It's a process. But what it doesn't mean is what they did was okay. Some people will hold on to a grudge because they feel like if they forgive that person, they're condoning what they did. But that is not forgiveness. That would really not be fair. God commands us to forgive because there's blessing in obedience.
Mm-hmm.
And when we obey and we guard our hearts from that bitterness. Bitterness is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. I don't know who said that, but it's true.
It's true.
When you're bitter, you're hurting yourself. You know, that person's out doing what they do and shopping and you know, fishing and doing their own thing, and you're sitting at home stewing, and they're just living their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it's because that bitterness hurts the person that's holding on to the grudge or the offense or the hurt. And so if I had not forgiven Mr. Watts and Harris Williams, for years of terrorism and murder and all the things that we went through, then I would have been in prison with them emotionally in my own prison.
So
but
true.
Thankfully, God set me free from that, and it took years of healing. It took years of praying. It took years of forgiving over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rebecca, describe for us now, when you, now obviously you mentioned their names, you've written about it, you talk about it. In you, how do you feel when you hear the name Mr. Watts and Harris Williams?
Well, I can thankfully tell you that a couple of years after my dad died, I heard from Mr. Watts. And I was thinking, okay, he was sentenced to 15 years in prison, so I must be his one phone call today. Okay, so he called the house. I'll talk to him. So I get on the phone with him, and he proceeds to ask me a question, which is what was played in the book trailer that you played at the beginning of the show. He calls to ask an almost unthinkable question. And I'm going to let the listeners read the book to find out the question that he asked me. Now, I'm kidding. I'll tell you. That's kind of mean.
Good one, Rebecca.
That's kind of mean to do to the listeners. I won't do it. I'll tell you. So he calls the house, and he says, hello, Becky, this is Mr. Watts, in this deep, gruff voice that I remembered as a terrified little girl. And I said, how are you? And he said, I'm fine. He said, I have a question to ask you. I can't live the rest of my life without knowing. And I said, okay. And he said, I have to know if you'll forgive me. And I said, Mr. Watts, my brother and I forgave you a long time ago. So when I hear the name Mr. Watts, I think of that conversation. I think of him asking for forgiveness and me being able to say, by the grace of God, not in my own strength, but by the grace of God, that yes, we forgave you a long time ago. And he said, well, I'm not in prison anymore. And oh, that not fair thing comes back, and I had to forgive him again, you know. He said, I'm not in prison anymore. He said, I only served 1 year.
Wow.
But during that 1 year, I found a relationship with Jesus Christ.
Holy smoke. Wow.
And I said, if Mr. Watts can give his heart to Jesus, there is hope for the whole world. I mean, if he can get saved, anybody can give their life to God, because we're talking about a hate-filled, murderous man who hated my dad and was willing to do. He offered a man $100,000 to run my dad over and make it look like an accident.
My God.
So this is a man now that had lost his power, not so much his money, but he was in prison for a year. But during that year, he found a relationship with Jesus. And
wow.
So that was the answer to my parents' prayer. Hmm. And I believe it's also because I obeyed the word of God and forgave.
Rebecca, when we come back, I want you to take us in a way that only you can, on the set of the Dr. Phil show.
Okay.
When you're going to meet, you and your brother are going to meet Harris Williams. And what happened there, the man who actually shot mom and dad, killed mom. And then through the PTSD, 7 years later, dad went home to be with the Lord. We're talking about a very deep issue today, dear friend, as you listen. We're talking about forgiveness and healing and a different kind of life when you forgive. Stay with us. We'll be back more with Rebecca Nichols. Stay with us.
Wandering the road of desperate life, aimlessly beneath the barren sky, leave it to me, I lead you home. Afraid that you will not be found, it won't be long before your sun goes down. Just leave it to me, I'll lead you home.
Hi, this is Danny Yamashiro. Many people tell me how much the Good Life Hawaii radio show has made a difference in their lives, how they've shared our free podcast with friends and family from thegoodlifehawaii.org. Others have connected with us on Facebook and Twitter. This is made possible through our corporate sponsors. A big mahalo to Waiawa dentist Dr. Kerry Ishihara, orthopedic surgeon Dr. Calvin Oishi, Dr. Jeffrey K. Miyazawa of Windward Family Dentistry, Burt's Union Service Station on School Street, Michael Beasley of Kaiani, Fran Valarmia Kahawai of Properties International Limited, Chinen and Arinaga Financial Group Incorporated, L&S Marine Services Consultants, and RG Maintenance LLC. To find out how to become a corporate sponsor, click partners at thegoodlifehawaii.org. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show, Hawaii's only local inspirational Christian talk show on 99.5 KGU, weekdays at 2 p.m. and 12 midnight, providing opportunities to connect family and friends with Jesus Christ.
Listening to The Good Life with Danny Yamashiro. The Good Life Hawaii Radio Show is a program of Danny Yamashiro Ministries, a division of Jesus Christ is Calling You. Contact Danny on Facebook and Twitter or visit him at www.thegoodlifehawaii.org.
Now, let's rejoin Danny and his special guest.
Rebecca Nichols Alonzo is the author of the book, The Devil in Pew Number 7. She speaks about betrayal and the power of forgiveness. Her story has been featured on the Dr. Phil Show, The 700 Club, Lifestyle Magazine, and CNN.com. She has been involved in ministry for many years. She and her husband, along with their two children, they live in Franklin, Tennessee. In fact, that's where she's, we're talking with her from there in Tennessee via phone. And you're listening to the Good Life Hawaii Radio Show. I'm Danny Yamashiro, along with Pastor Norman Nakanishi, and we're so grateful that you're with us today. Before our break, she was talking with us about forgiving the man behind all the diabolical things that had gone on in her home. To get more about this show, go to thegoodlifehawaii.com. To get her book, The Devil in Pew Number 7, go to amazon.com. Rebecca, you were on the Dr. Phil Show. Take us, what was it like being on set there, and what transpired?
Well, since the book came out, like you said, the story's been featured on a lot of different shows and publishing outlets. And so somehow, well, I know how, it was totally God. He allowed our book to come across the desk of a Dr. Phil assistant. And she got it in front of the executive producer, who then called me and said, you know, at breakneck speed, L.A. style, "Hi, this is Julie Ross, and I'm calling from the Dr. Phil Show, and we want to have you on our show to have a reunion with Harris Williams." Now, Harris Williams was the man, like I said, who had shot and killed my mother and also shot my dad. Well, if he was sentenced to life in prison, how in the world were we going to have a reunion show unless we went to the prison? Hmm. Well, what happened was that my husband happened to one day look up this man and find out that he had been released from prison after serving 21 years. And so that was another point in my life where I had to say, okay, I forgive this man again. He has served less time in prison than my sweet mother had been gone to heaven. So I had to forgive him again. And then now we've got the Dr. Phil Show calling saying, will you have a reunion show with him? So it was a first time ever on the Dr. Phil Show of victims' children meeting with the murderer of their parents. So we fly out to L.A. You know, we're there 5 days after that invitation was extended to us. And it was all just so dreamlike, being there, trying to prepare emotionally to talk with the man who shot our parents, killing our mom. And, you know, when we saw him, and I asked my brother this later, I said, what did you feel when you saw him on the stage sitting across from us? And Dr. Phil is sitting there looking at us like, I don't know how in the world these two kids are able to sit across from this man who killed their mother. But I asked my brother, Daniel, later, I said, what did you feel when you saw Harris after 33 years? Because the last time I'd seen him, I was testifying against him as a witness at the murder trial when I was 8 years old. That was the last time I had seen him. And he said, I felt compassion for him. And I said, so did I. And see, only God can do that. Right. Only God can put compassion and love in your heart for someone who killed your mother. But while we were sitting there across from him, I could feel the remorse and regret in his heart, even though he had never apologized to us. He had plenty of time, those 21 years, to write us a letter and apologize, but we forgave before the apology. Mm-hmm. You know, he did apologize on the show quietly to my brother and I, but we did not wait for that apology. We had forgiven him years ahead of time, and it's just been such a testimony to hear people from all over the world that saw the Dr. Phil Show with us forgiving our mother's murderer. And then they reran that show 6 months later during their summer rerun. And we had another influx of emails from people all over the world, Hawaii, Australia, Africa, Canada, South America, all over the world, people are saying, if you can forgive these men that hurt your family, then I can forgive the people that have hurt me. I can forgive my family members, my the people I attend church with. You know, there's people that you go to church with sometimes, and those are some of the most hurtful ones that you can get, because you know there's a level of trust there. They said, if you can forgive these men, I can forgive my neighbor or my coworker, or even just the little things, people that cut you off driving in traffic, you know, just to live with a heart that is quick to forgive. And then that is just a huge testimony to other people around you that's looking for that peace that you have. And so that's what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful that I have peace, I have joy, I have hope, and I look forward to one day seeing our parents again.
Yes.
When we're all united. That is the great reunion that we look forward to.
You exude, Rebecca, you exude a strength, a fortitude that is divine. Now we can see the grace of God in that resolve, which you have. An example that God can enable us to forgive, that God can enable us to overcome and break through barriers of hate, unforgiveness, that handy... That affect us or circumvent our growth or in living an abundant life. As that goes, there are certain decisions that you have made in your ministry life. Opportunities have come, and
well, you know, Rebecca, obviously a riveting story like this, you know, your story could easily become a movie, and you've had opportunities that way, but you haven't compromised. You've taken a stand in making sure that Jesus Christ is not removed from the production and from the retelling. Where are you in that? And tell us a little bit about how you have refused to cave into that.
Well, we have had interest from over 10 different production companies out of LA. Yeah,
okay.
Out of L.A. saying, wow, your story's amazing. We would love to, you know, see it in a visual format such as a movie. And they're talking theater, you know. TV is fine with me. I am very excited just about getting the story out there.
Mm-hmm.
After 3 years, the book has been out since July of 2010. And it has just been amazing to see how many people have purchased this book, read it. Chapter 15 is all about forgiveness. So one lady told me she had to read that one chapter 3 times before she could finally forgive the person that hurt her. But God continues to use it. We're in negotiations with Sony Pictures right now to format the story as a faith-based story.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're excited about that. We're, you know, asking people to help us pray that that'll get wrapped up soon with those negotiations, because then it'll take a couple of years. So it possibly could be in theaters by 2015.
Mm-hmm. And it's probably true that if you had compromised earlier to lesser scripts, it could have already hit the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's conceivable in this day and age, and I commend you for not doing that.
Well, the whole purpose of writing the book was to tell people what my family experienced, what we experienced, how God helped us forgive, and then spread that message of forgiveness to help other people that have gone through hurt, that have been wounded. And for it to be in a movie, just how much more God could use that to spread that message of forgiveness around the world, that, you know, no matter what we go through. I mean, I get emails from people that have been abused and hurt badly by people that they trusted, and then they read our story, and they're just so encouraged to forgive after reading our story and reading how God helps us and He can also help them. And you know, Romans 8:28 has always been a favorite scripture of mine, and it says, and we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to His purposes. and that's everything, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Well, and you,
it can cause it all to work for good.
And you did it before they asked.
Mm-hmm.
That is a leadership quality, to do it before they ask. We've got just a few minutes left, a couple minutes left. Pastor Norman, any leadership reflections in relation to this?
Well, you know, Danny and Rebecca, you know this leadership is influence. Your husband, Rebecca, that hunk, Kenny, is a leader. In fact, I like to really get to, that's a man's man. And what I get from both of you is there's this refusal, this resolve to compromise your soul by holding on to resentment and bitterness towards the man behind the shooting, the shooter, and God himself for allowing the tragedy. And now today, a best-selling book and yes, a movie will multiply your influence, an incredible platform for the gospel. But that's because you took a stand. That's because you said, I'm just not going to follow my emotions. I'm going to lead my emotions by the grace of God. When the pressure is on, people instinctively look for leaders, examples. And for every one of us, a moment will come and others could be watching. You could say the world around Jesus watched as he was crucified for our sins. Among his last words, same as Rebecca's, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And a Roman soldier who witnessed Christ's example was moved to faith as he proclaimed, truly, this was the Son of God. And may that be the confession of many through your leadership and example, Rebecca. God bless you.
Thank you, Pastor Norman.
Rebecca, we appreciate you taking the time to share heart to heart with us and with our dear
Thank
listeners
you,
today. And may the Lord continue to expand the reach of this message, the message of the Lord, a message of love and the message of forgiveness. Rebecca, the Lord bless you. Thank you.
Aloha,
thank you,
Rebecca.
Danny.
God bless.
Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Norman.
Oh, God, great.
And there's
great
no better time than right now to share the love of Christ with someone near you. If you haven't done so, this is the perfect moment to open your heart to Jesus Christ. Visit thegoodlifehawaii.com. Click Get to Know Jesus. And to stand with us financially, thegoodlifehawaii.com. Click the Partners tab. We've got some information for you there. Romans 12:14. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. It's always a blessing to be with you. Special thank you to our guest today, Rebecca Alonzo. Until next time, along with my co-host Norman Nakanishi and our technical producer Leah Rodriguez, I'm Danny Yamashiro. Remember, the Lord is with you. Let him unleash your God-given purpose today.
Thank you for listening in on today's broadcast of The Good Life with host Danny Yamashiro. We hope that today's program has been a blessing for you. The Good Life radio program is listener supported, and we'd like to encourage you to pray about becoming a sponsor or donor. Your support makes it possible for us to continue to minister to God's people through The Good Life. To become a sponsor or to make a donation, please visit thegoodlifehawaii.org. That's thegoodlifehawaii.org, and may God richly bless you with The Good Life.
Just leave it to me. I'll leave